I spread a song so you can sing along with my special guest or two.
Or two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast, by chance, explores musicals for you. Theme Song, yeah!
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Life's But a Song, a podcast that likes to live in the land of musicals. I'm your host, John, and with me today is the spookiest bestie of the pod. It's Lauren Gismondi, everyone. Woo!
Boo.
Boo.
Boo. Oh, boy.
How are you doing, Lauren?
I'm well, John. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. And we're here today to talk about a show I thought was brand spanking new. I didn't realize it's almost 20 years old at this point. Ride the Cyclone. We're specifically going to discuss the 2016 off-Broadway version of it. Don't ask how we watched this one. You know what that means. Ride the Cyclone, the book, music, and lyrics are by Jacob Richman and Brooke Maxwell. This production was directed by Rachel Rockwell. And according to Wikipedia, that's a new phrase for me, everyone.
Woohoo! We got to start somewhere.
Yes. Over 300 episodes in and Wikipedia is now my summary source. Members of the St. Cassian High School Chamber Choir of Uranium City, Saskatchewan, have perished on a faulty roller coaster called the Cyclone. Each tells their story in song form to win the reward from a mechanical fortune teller, the chance to return to life. So it's Cats. Basically.
Okay.
Prove me wrong. Am I wrong?
I don't think you're wrong. I will say that this by itself makes way more sense than Cats.
And yeah,
that's really saying something, isn't it?
Because there's an actual book. It's not just a song cycle. But I was watching this and I was just like, this is Cats. Because they're coming forward with their song.
Yeah.
Whatever their song is going to be about. And then literally the Karnak is like, okay, so one of you gets to go back to life. And I'm like, that's the heavy side layer, isn't it? I've never seen the show before. I've only heard about it. I know that, like, in recent years, especially on TikTok, I've been seeing a lot about the show. Have you seen this before?
I had not, but, and the reason I brought this to you is because a lot of my students that are 20 years younger than I am, so I'm going to be 35 at the end of the year, who are like 15, I know, right? 15, 16, 14 years old, are obsessed with this musical. They are obsessed with it. And actually, one of the schools that I work for, one of the song interpretation classes is doing It's Not a Game / It's Just a Ride as their.
Oh my God.
Yes. So I'm in the middle of coaching that song. And one of my other students or my private students is doing The Ballad of Jane Doe. So I am currently steeped in Ride the Cyclone at this exact moment.
So this is a good opportunity for you to understand the context then.
Of course. Yeah. And you know, it's very much like you have to walk the talk with these kids, with all these kids. Oh my God, I'm getting old.
These children,
which is, of course, you have to put this thing that you're studying into context. So you do need to watch the whole thing or at least listen to the whole thing. Oh my God. So I have to take I took my own medicine here.
Yeah.
I took a heaping tablespoon of my own goddamn medicine.
And you decided to make an episode of the podcast about it as well.
It is
two birds, one stone.
Yeah, exactly. And it has elements of spook in it, obviously, because, well, everybody, it starts off with everybody being dead. And, oh, there's a rat that's going to chew through some cables and destroy everything.
Like, I fucking loved that. We're talking about Virgil
the rat.
A rat that plays bass guitar as well. Which... okay, so obviously we're not watching an authorized version of an authorized recording of this.
Correct. And
So
so yes, correct. So you know there are ways, and that's
there are
all I will say
ways.
about that.
But I feel like Virgil doubles as one of the kids,
I think
because
so.
I doubt that Rat is on stage the whole show. Otherwise, people would be laughing their ass off at it, playing bass guitar. But so, okay, first and foremost, how old are these people supposed to be? I
Well,
know they're in high
they're
school.
in high school. I think they're all, well, I know that Ocean is a senior. She's about to graduate. So I think all of them are upperclassmen. I don't
Okay.
believe that they are, you know, anybody's.
And therefore, Constance is probably a senior as well because they were best
Yeah,
friends, allegedly.
exactly. Yes.
Okay, like I said, I've only heard of this through TikTok. I know former guest of the pod, Caden Marshall, was in a production of this.
Oh, cool.
I feel like this is, not to disrespect the show, because I know it did have a off-Broadway run, which is
It
what
did,
we're
yeah,
kind
the
of
Lucille
talking about.
Lortle. Yeah.
But I feel like this is the type of show that like schools will do because it's so cheap, technically. Like it can be done cheaply. No, I'm
Yes.
being serious.
No,
Or
you're right. It is budget friendly. It's
it, yeah.
definitely a budget friendly situation, but it also similarly could go the other direction and be a total spectacle
Yes, like this.
because of the given circumstances. Like, you know, it could go either way,
Like this
which is cool.
production played with projection a lot.
Yes.
A lot.
Yes.
And you know,
Yes.
I loved when they did it during Talia.
That was so cool with the
Yeah.
skirts
With
being
the
used as the
skirts
screen.
and hit
Oh,
and his shirt as
the
well.
shirt. Yes.
I think this is kind of like Lizzie, or what's another good one? That type of show where any theater can easily do it, and it's a solid show, I feel like.
Yeah,
The at
yeah.
least the production I saw, I've been reading on the Wikipedia that like things have changed over the years, lyrics have changed, they've cut some characters. I think there was supposed to be like eight characters at one point, and then they morphed it into the seven, or well, technically there's eight because of Virgil, but the seven characters that are on stage constantly.
Right. Yes.
And it's I like it. We're releasing this in spooky season, and it's like more morbid than horror, I feel like, because they're in the afterlife.
Right. They've already crossed over. It's like it yeah, so that there's that.
Yeah, and they're again, it's cats, but instead of being they are going back to life, which okay. How early on did you think it was going to be Jane Doe who won? Like as soon as she showed up, I was like, "You're the winner. You're the winner,
Okay, well,
baby."
I have an unfair advantage because the in the sheet music for It's Not a Game, that's the way that the sheet music, it gives all those cue lines where they're voting. So I already knew that that was going to happen. So that didn't come as a surprise to me,
Okay.
you
No,
know.
I picked up, and then part of me was just like, but how is she gonna come back to life? She's decapitated.
Well, that's what's interesting, I guess. It doesn't get, you know, he doesn't specify it because, you know, Karnak dies. So we don't, so that
True.
he would have probably explained it to us, but you know, he says at the
And
beginning of the show, like I already know I'm not gonna make it to the end of this.
Karnak changes the rules constantly,
I
which is
love that. It's so
hilarious.
stupid. But it is the kind of thing where if you've ever played, I don't know. Maybe some of my relatives are kind of nuts, but like I have definitely sat at game nights where that ends up happening, where somebody doesn't like the rules and then they just decide to change them, and all of a sudden, like, okay, now we all have to abide by these new rules. We've played games like that, some of those card
Yeah,
games, with our
Flux.
friends. Yes, where the rules change constantly over the course of the game, whether you like it or not.
Right, but that is the point of that game. In
I
this
know.
scenario, though, it's to fuck with Ocean, it feels
Of
like.
course. Oh, well, of course, because you know she presents herself as, you know, before she knows that it she's going to be the one, for she knows that, she's gonna, that it's gonna be a unanimous vote who gets to
Right.
cross, oh, whoever gets to cross back, like, not crossing over, we're crossing back.
And
Just
so,
goes ahead
okay.
and she insults everybody. So, yeah.
So the Wikipedia of this says that Ocean O'Connell Rosenberg is mainly portrayed as the protagonist throughout the show. Would you agree with that, or would you say that this is more of like an ensemble piece?
I think she's the antagonist. I mean, I guess the Cyclone is the real antagonist, but like she's the antagonist to me.
I don't think there's one specific person that is the
No.
protagonist, though.
No. The protagonist to me, if I had to pick, would probably be Karnak.
Karnak.
Karnak is the protagonist. I don't think Ocean is. I don't think any of the students really are.
No.
I really do think if I had to pick somebody, I'm like, it's Karnak. And yes, like I said, she, because to be an antagonist also means to antagonize, means to like cause action. Even if it's negative, it's still causing action. And Ocean does do that. So I would say she's more of an antagonist than anything else.
Right, because even though she's the one who is supposedly has her shit together and is the straight A student and is like en route to be valedictorian and all that, like you know that we, and we know this person, we all know this person,
We all
everyone.
went to school with somebody like that. Maybe even, maybe even now we work with people like that.
I guess they say that she's the protagonist because she is the one that has the most character development throughout the whole show. But
Maybe.
they
She has the
all
biggest, she has, she changes the most.
she's she changes the most, but also like they all go through a lot. Like we
Yes.
through their songs we reveal like who they really are, and then like some actions happen. For example, like during Noel's lament when he's pretending to be what is his alter ego?
The French, that girl.
Monique Boo,
Yeah.
a post-war French hooker.
Yes. Which I
During
lived for. I fucking lived for that whole scene.
I
It
loved it,
was so good, so simple, and so effective.
but during that song,
Yes.
he and Misha, the Ukrainian
Yes.
student,
Yeah.
make out, and then there's the whole like debate from then onward about Misha, like is like love is love, whatever, man. So
I'm Ukrainian and we are a passionate people. And he
right,
says it. I mean.
and people call his girlfriend fake and everything, which could be, that's never resolved, but that's not the point. The
Yeah.
point is to like get to their core, their heart songs, to use a Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist term. But what I found interesting, at least with this production, I can't speak for others. So if anyone wants to tell me how you did it, we'll get to the socials at the end. But with this production, I found it interesting that all but Ocean's songs had some sort of like change, physical change to them, as simple as Constance taking down her hair,
Yeah, taking her
or
pom-poms down.
yeah, or like going to the extreme of during Space Age Bachelor Man, Ricky has a whole costume change into like some sort of furry Ziggy Stardust.
I see. Now that's where I got the Cats reference from. He looked like a character out of Cats to
He did
me.
look, well, he's on a planet with
With
cats.
cats. So yeah, so there you go. There's your cats. We found it. I found
Yeah,
it. You found it. We found
he's the Rum Tum Tugger. But space
it.
Rum Tum Tugger.
Space. Rum Tum Tugger in space. The
But
sequel you didn't know you wanted or needed, but here it
but
is.
here it is. But I thought it was fascinating that like during Ocean's song, What the World Needs, she doesn't really, she stays the same, you know,
Yeah.
costume, no props or anything. Like everyone else was very prop heavy. And at one point I was just like, they really got a handle on the afterlife when like the props magically show up for them. But yeah, I honestly, before we started recording, you asked me what I thought of this, and I enjoyed it. I wish I saw this live, you know? I would love to see it live
Yeah.
because I feel like there is such an openness to the interpretation of everything. I mean, it's not like 42nd Street, you know, where it's kind of set in its
It's
ways.
very straightforward,
It's very
yes.
straightforward. The only thing you can futz with is like colors of costumes and things like that. But this one, like during the Ballad of Jane Doe, when she's flying, that's what this production did. Now, another, which blew my fucking mind because
She's upside down and she's singing like that. I'm like, yep, this is that's why that one actress has played that character so much.
her skirt doesn't move. And
Yeah, I was
that
like, I don't know how
freaked
that
me out.
works. I'm like, it's gotta be magnets or something. I was very confused. In a good way. In a, like, wow, how did they do that?
Yeah, where it's like, oh my God. And like I noticed afterwards that like hers was like stiffer than the other two. So I was like, okay, I understand you
Good
probably did
catch.
some
There's
things.
like it's packed with horse hair or something.
But still, the fact that like it stayed covering her legs, like it didn't, like
Didn't
you ever,
move.
you, everyone has flopped upside down at some point and their clothes like move with gravity, but somehow they defied gravity with this.
I mean, it is the in between, so I guess anything is possible, right? We're not really, they haven't really, that's the whole thing is like, I want to play a game, which of course I'm in the middle of watching the Saw series right now with my boyfriend. And so they're like, I want to play a game. I was like, Saw!
So I have an issue with the
Please.
writers. They messed up.
Pourquoi?
In Every Story's Got a Lesson, they talk about the Saw series and they say Saw 5 is the one with the insurance. That's 6.
I thought so.
Yeah.
I was like, maybe I can't count.
I mean, also the whole series is about like the mistreatment of the medical
Right,
industry or the
right, right.
mistreatment of
Holding,
patients in the medical.
yeah, holding people accountable for their piss poor actions.
Right.
Yes.
But Saw 6 is the one where it's the insurance company and that's also the one where somebody chops their arm off with
Yeah.
a cleaver.
Yeah.
So I know my Saw movies, everyone. I don't just do musicals. I watch other things.
Yay. That has to be well balanced.
But you were saying that Jane Doe, you're right. Emily Rome, I believe that's how you pronounce her last name, played Jane Doe for like, I'm seeing like 6 years. Granted,
Yeah.
2020 happened. And Lillian Castillo, who played Constance, played the same amount in the same shows. However, they are not the ones who have been with the show the longest. That would
Right.
be Colby Wardell, who played Noel. He's been since the 2011 Toronto run. But since we're here, I want to talk about the world premiere happening in 2008, which is interesting because again, I'm just seeing this now. So
Right.
I don't know what happened that all of a sudden there's a resurgence of it. But the fact that it started in 2008, and granted, from what I've been reading, it feels like it was potentially a different show. I mean, it's the same show, but like everything else was different, where they had some songs that were inevitably changed. Like I said earlier, there were some characters that were changed or cut entirely. Yeah,
Snip,
you're doing
snip.
your scissor move.
Snip,
It was in Victoria, British Columbia in 2008 that the world premiere happened, and then a production played at the Theatre Passy Mauroy. We're going with it in
sure.
2011, and then from there it came to Chicago and then off Broadway, and then there was a tour, and then I believe the last I'm reading about it is that there was a production in Arena Stage in 2023. Maybe that's why there's such a resurgence of it recently because of that production.
Well, that, and also it moved, it made its way to the States, because these writers are Canadian. It takes place in Saskatchewan. The musical is part of a trilogy. So there's a play that was that comes first, and then there's the second, then Ride the Cyclone is the second part of the trilogy, and the third part is yet to be written, or is yet to be produced. Maybe it's written, but I don't, it hasn't been produced yet. And the reason that that's interesting is because I feel that eventually, when all three are set and they're out there, the actress, who is Jane Doe, who you find her name is Penny. She is a character that's actually in the first play.
Yes, which is called Legoland.
That's it.
Yeah, which Legoland is a one-act play centering around Penny Lamb and her brother Ezra Lamb, which is from the Ride the Cyclone wiki page.
There you go. Listen, the fandom for this show is strong. It's very strong.
Which is fascinating because I don't know what the third one is going to be. Is it going to be a
Neither
whole
do
dance
I.
piece?
I don't know. I don't know. I really don't
Listen,
know.
Jacob and Brooke, if you're listening, because it seems like you also wrote the Legoland.
Yeah,
The
that's
third
them as
one
well.
should be like the Billy Joel musical, Moving Out.
Moving out.
It'd be like that, where it's strictly dancing. Do it. Make it happen. This way you can call it your Red Curtain trilogy as well. Baz Luhrmann isn't the only one that can do that. So usually I wait until the end to ask this question to people who are actors on it, but who
Sure.
would you like to play in this?
Karnak. I want to be a lady fortune teller. I don't have to sing. Amazing, because this music is friggin' hard. It's beautiful, but this music is hard because it's one on a part. So you need to know what the hell you're doing. And nobody catches a break in the
No.
show. Everybody is singing it on almost every single number.
The one that I noticed before they like got into the meat of it is during the Uranium Suite where Ricky doesn't sing at all. That's because obviously we learn he has a neurogenetic disease,
Neurodegenerative.
neurodegenerative disease. Thank you. And I don't know why they added him. I guess it's like Glee rules or something.
I mean, I am all for inclusion. I know that said, there is the flip side of the conversation is that, in the afterlife, all of a sudden he can speak and he can move without issue. And then every disability activist that I have ever encountered would say that, that doesn't make, now you're making the disability is being minimized, for the sake of storytelling. And it was very interesting. Like, all that's a whole separate conversation that I should not be the one having. I can sit at the table and listen, but I'm not the one who's going to have the conversation as to what, how that should be handled.
I thought it was interesting during like the brief setup to his song, where they talk about how like the parents even stopped talking. I was just like, why? Like, I feel like, and again, there are people like that where they will upend their life and change things drastically, but it's well mean meant, but I don't think it's correct. Am I saying the right things? Please tell
I
me if
don't,
I'm.
well, here's the thing. That's just it. Is like this is an ongoing conversation. I say that because I got into a very interesting conversation with a bunch of people about Nessa Rose and Wicked and how that's being handled in the movie, and like very interesting conversation about
Right.
accessibility in the theater, accessibility
Ableism, yeah.
backstage, all of these, exactly, ableism and how prominent it is. So that is an interesting thing that gets brought up in this. And you and I talked about why is there controversy offline. We discussed like the controversy of this, of Ride the Cyclone, just to bring it back to this.
Right.
And part of the reason that it encountered some of that pushback is because they changed Ricky Potts' character so that he no longer was disabled.
Yes.
I
So
believe, right? Am I remembering this correctly?
I'm reading this right off the Wikipedia page. Again, I'm citing my sources, so nobody come for me.
Heaping tablespoon of salt, everybody. Heaping
Right.
tablespoon of
Well,
it.
so there's a whole section called controversy.
Yes, that's what,
And
yes, there is.
apparently in November 2022, at the McCarter Theater production in Princeton, New Jersey, there was an actor who was the first disabled person to play Ricky Potts. They don't mention the disability, but he apparently was fired from the production because he had a medical emergency that sent him off stage one night. And then the able-bodied understudy assumed the role, and they changed the script so that they got rid of the disability altogether, but fans were like, put it back in. So they have now two versions of the script. They have the version where the original version,
What we watched.
what we watched, yes. And then they have a second version that is their high school edition, which is without the without the disease or anything like that. So I don't know if that's that. I don't think that's right. I mean,
It's like, does this actually solve the problem, though? It
no, no,
addresses
because
the symptoms. It does address the symptoms, albeit not well, but it does try to address the symptoms. But it's a much bigger, this is a much broader conversation. So yeah, this is it's happening in this microcosm of this one little musical that's, never had a Broadway run. So
right. But I feel like though they handled it well in the in the version we watched at least, because there's a broader theory or philosophical discussion here about like what it's like in the afterlife. You know, can deaf people hear?
Right, can blind people see?
Can blind people see? Do people who don't have limbs all of a sudden have limbs again? You know,
And those of
it's.
us who were able-bodied in life, do we lose all our senses? Like on the flip side, like why not? Like we should ask the opposite question too,
Right.
which is once everything goes dark, does it go dark forever?
And I feel like in his song, Space Age Bachelor Man, it is because he is.
So good.
But I think it's because he. I mean, they say he can't talk in life, right? Like, that's what
But just
the.
because somebody can't speak doesn't mean they can't think. And that's clear. That is super clear with his character
Which
because
is
he
the
is the
point.
most thoughtful and intellectual of the group.
Which is the point I
So,
wanted to make, that like he created this whole sci-fi world for himself to just cope with life. And, you know, people of every walk of life has some sort of thing like that.
Yeah, play a world we escape to.
So I am I'm fighting for this show, saying that like they did it. I think they did it well. They treated it correctly. I don't think, you know, there's I think, you know, there may be a line where they're like, oh my God, you could speak now. Like they but like there's
They put it in
nothing.
there.
They don't make fun of him, you know, it's not a joke or anything. They treat it very serious, at least in this production. I can't speak for former iterations of this or what they've
Was
changed.
gonna say more recently,
Yes. So at least in this one that we watched, don't worry how we watched it, but we watched it. It felt like, you know, a very honest for that character, at least. And, you know, they started the show with him in the crutches, and like they brought it back before his song. And like that choreography was very, I think, very interesting visually. Like, you know, he took it and did some sort of like grand gesture to get rid of it. And it was, you know, yeah.
Yeah, well, because they're trying to illustrate a point. Just because how you see me is not how I see myself. And I think that's kind of what these songs are about, really. Like it's the idea of this is how the world sees me, this is how the world perceives me, and then this is how I see myself. This is how I really am. Which now the reason I'm gonna this we're making a loop. We're making a goddamn loop. Here we
We're
go.
making a loop.
I think it's appropriate that Ocean doesn't change during her first number.
Yes, because this way, then we, the audience, are like, oh my God, you're that high school bitch that
Exactly. You
we
are
all.
transparent as all get out. You have that nice, sweet veneer, but on the inside, you are prepared to cut people if you have to in order to survive.
Right, because they're all character tropes,
Yeah.
but then, like you said, during their songs, they get upended.
Yeah.
So,
You
like
get to see who
Misha.
they really are. Misha's a great example. I think Constance as well. That monologue that she does before the
Oh my
song,
God.
I was crying in my bed last night. Like I was sitting in my bed, like I'm watching this and just weeping. I was like, she is hitting such a nerve with me personally that I was not prepared for. So that's, I mean, brilliant. Really, really brilliant acting. I can see why she stuck with the production for as long as she, like the two that have stuck with the production the longest, like the ones who stuck, I could see like why they've been attached to this. Because like you can see the refinement of the characters over time as you steep in that world.
If you're it, I know you're more a voice teacher, but like if you should be like if you have that one student that you know can handle that
That
monologue,
monologue,
I would
yeah.
tell I would I mean, it is beautiful. And then, but I didn't cry during that. I cried during It's Just a Ride, the
Oh
last
yeah.
song.
It's meant to be, it's supposed to do that.
Oh my God.
Yep.
And again, you know, there's five people in tight harmonies. It's kind of like Company in a way where everyone is singing their own line. But you have to
You have to
know.
plug in and listen. You really have to plug in and listen. And I'm saying that because I'm doing it right now with that song. You have to really, and like, you have to listen. Like, nobody can be louder than anybody else, or else this doesn't work. And you know, they are a chamber choir. So I can hear that in the way all of the ensemble songs are constructed. They have those really classic chamber sound to them. Like that's, so I think that that's super cool too.
Okay.
That they're utilizing what they were doing in as in their lives. It moves over, it crosses with them, and the songs are written with that in mind, which I appreciate.
Now, I wasn't
Bonus points for
sure.
continuity. Ding ding ding.
I wasn't sure if like their songs were a play off of musical theater songs in a way, because during Noel's Lament it felt very Candor and Ebb. Granted, they are making references to Chicago and Cabaret
Cabaret.
within the like costuming and blocking and as well as the song itself, but it
Well, and the
felt
fact that Noel wants to be Marlena Dietrich, I mean, that's huge. And she was such an icon at that period, you know, when she had the height of her like star power. So, I mean, that's who she was.
Yeah,
And
and
that's all this little gay boy from, middle of nowhere, Saskatchewan wants to be.
but like I don't know if that was the intent of them pulling reference from other musicals or other composers or something like that. Granted, every song is vastly different, and I
Yes.
appreciate that because not everyone's musical taste is the same. We're here talking about a musical. We like musicals, but like you could like hardcore screamo and I could like, bubblegum pop and that's all I listen to. But you never know though,
It's true. It's true.
and it makes me wonder though, like if they're also saying in the afterlife, your true heart song is what they are performing. But I don't think that holds true for Ocean. Because I think
No,
Ocean, it's more in the
not
lyrics
initially.
rather than the music.
Yeah, it's she's in it, like her initially. I mean, it's all surface, and
Right.
then by the time we get to it's not a game.
That's when it's like.
That's when she gets. That's when you. That's when we get to kind of. That's when we get it. You know. That's when she gets it. So we get to get it. Or
And then.
well, maybe we always understood. And we just wanted her to catch up. I don't
And the
know.
same thing kind of happens with Misha, because we
Yeah.
get this song is awesome,
I wish you so good.
Which is him in his rap persona, and there's auto-tune and all that. But then we
The
get to
auto
Talia,
tune.
which
Yeah.
is more grounded, where he's like really embracing his Ukrainian heritage and really like talking about, you know, how he feels about things. And then we do get a little bit of the rapper auto-tuney in Talia, which I thought was amazing. I wish there was a little bit more of it personally, but not needed. And then we get to Sugar Cloud, which kind of reminded me of Kindergarten Boyfriend from Heathers in a way.
Yes. It is. They are quite similar. They're quite similar. Yes.
Yeah, where it's power ballady, belty, you know, I'm speaking my truth. And then she busts out the recorder and I just started laughing.
Yeah. It's like, what are
Is
we, what
that
is even happening right now? Nobody knows. Nobody knows what's happening.
so have any of your students brought to you Sugar Cloud or
No. They all want to be Ocean and they all want to be Jane Doe. And I gotta be honest, and I have the one student who is working on Ballad of Jane Doe is the only one that I'm working with that I would even say is remotely capable of nailing it. Because
right.
it's vocally very demanding. You have to have kind of a natural
A
understanding of
range.
classical music because it is written like an aria. And you know, you worked at the Met. You know what I'm talking about.
Speaking of Aria in a way, no what Ariana Armand recently plugged that she did a show at Stonewall and she sang this song. And after listening to it, I was like, no wonder you're
Of
singing this
course.
song for a Halloween themed show.
Yep.
Like, as soon as Jane Doe got to those high notes, I was just like, yes, of course, you're probably gonna go one octave higher, Ariana.
Yeah, the options up for that song are pretty intense. They're pretty intense. I'm like, what? Oh, and she's upside down and she's doing that.
She,
Huh. Okay.
she's flying all over the
Yeah, it's one thing to do this
stage.
stuff in a studio or, you know, just do it while you're sitting or just being upright in
Like a
general, but it's
cabaret
another,
or something, yeah.
yeah, I'm like, it's another thing to be, you know, flying upside down and that you have to make that happen. I'm like, that is
And
impressive.
she's still
Yep.
throughout. 'Cause
Yep.
okay, so Jane Doe, obviously they talk about how she's she was
Yeah, and
decapitated.
that's why nobody knows who she is and nobody comes to find her.
Did I miss that she like fused with the doll or something? Is that what they said? Or she took the head of the doll as her head?
I have seen, I read in the show notes that in order to portray the fact that she's decapitated without having the actress look decapitated is they do the doll with no head. And that she carries her around as her body. Yeah. Now, I would love to see a production where they are find a way to mask the actress's head so that she can actually be decapitated. But then what's interesting is that, you know, okay, so she gets decapitated at the end of her life. Why doesn't she come back with a full head?
That's my question.
Because if Ricky could come back and be able to speak and not need the crutches anymore, shouldn't she have a head? What is this?
Well, unless it's truly like Cats, where they're just being reborn, not necessarily back to their body, but they are
Yeah, I
going
guess
to
that's true.
be re, you know. I don't know.
I don't know. You see, so that's an interesting, like, that is an interesting, like, the doll. the headless doll is it's visual, and it's just enough to kind of like, and they're all supposed to be kind of creeped out by her, which is effective. And the actress who portrays Jane Doe makes herself to be super creepy. So yeah, of course, you're just like, what are you? You're like, nope, not gonna stand next to you. Like, you got too many weird ideas, sis.
The one thing I didn't like, I didn't flat this, but I just want to say I didn't like
Yes.
it, is that her shirt is very different than the other shirts, the other two.
Yes.
I get it. I didn't like it because of it broke the uniform, but I understood why, so she stood out even more. That makes sense.
It does.
'Cause like she has this weird makeup on, she has this like Shirley Temple-esque wig going on. I'm pretty sure she has like contact lenses in to make her eyes blacked out or something, so that she looks like Coraline, the other mother or
Yes.
something.
Button
But
eyes, baby.
it the blouse bothered me.
It wasn't period. And that's, I think, was confusing. I don't know if it was meant to make her look more like the doll.
Like a Victorian era, and I think this is supposed to take place in 2008.
It does take
Or
place because there's YouTube. So it's definitely the internet exists. So we know that, and YouTube exists because it gets discussed. And we know Saw has happened. So we, so, but she does, the outfit is this, it's the same color scheme. But I thought, now that as I'm like sitting here really thinking about what you're talking about, like why it would bother you, is like, I thought it was made to look like she was the doll that she was carrying. Because the doll
yeah.
had kind of like more like Victorian-ish era.
And
Like
that's
fabrics and
specific to this
construction.
production, I think.
Yes.
I
Yeah.
don't.
It may not be the same in every show,
It may
right?
not. It may
Because
not be like
different
what's written
designers, different
in,
directors,
right?
whatever.
Different concepts entirely.
Exactly.
Although it
But
was
I have like,
interesting, like before they, oh God, the opening like really bothered me in a way because they kept talking about how there's six victims, but you only see five in the videos and everything. And then Jane Doe shows up, and I was like, oh, she's the sixth, but why is she dressed like I went on a journey with this, and I think we're supposed to,
yeah,
because
that's the literally the point. You're supposed to ride
the
the
cyclone.
cyclone. It's in the title. It's in the title. You know that you're, it's like buckle up, buckaroos, like we're going. It's in the title. It tells you a lot, almost everything you need to know, truthfully. Truthfully. Now I have to ask, if you had the opportunity to direct a production yourself,
Okay.
would you say yes? And how would you do it? Take as much time as you need. Do,
To direct, you're asking me.
yes, direct.
Oh, fuck yeah, I'll do
Do,
it.
do, do, do. Okay, cool. Do you have a, what might this hypothetical concept be for a production of this? Now that you've seen it, you've listened to it, you have a feel for who these people are. We grew up with people like this, John. For those who are the uninitiated, John and I have known each other since I was 11 and he was 12,
12.
thereabouts. We went to middle school, high school, and college together, and we've been relatively inseparable.
And you've been on almost like 100 episodes of this
Oh my goodness, I
podcast
can't even count that high.
already.
I just, so that's, so there's a certain amount of like, I'm very curious, especially people I know well, when we get to have really decent subject matter. And if you've heard me before on this podcast, you've heard me mouth off about like how sometimes the books for musicals suck big time. And this is one of those situations where it's like, no, the book is actually really, especially like in the last 20 years, I'm like, this book actually is really good. The script stands up by itself. And I can't say that about many modern musicals anymore at all. So I have ideas percolating of how I would want to do this.
I mean, I would first and foremost do the original script, not the high school edition, the changing one,
Sure.
because there is something about Ricky that I don't even want to look at the changes that were made. Like, I liked the strong choice of him not singing at the beginning because they're supposed to be on the ride.
Right.
And
They're at that point,
so,
they're still living. Yeah.
yeah. And so to get to the afterlife, I would maybe want to add a little more magic on stage. Like, I get it. The Ballad of Jane Doe is like total magic because she doesn't even know who she is.
Yep.
So
Without a brain, she has no clue who she is.
she's this
Yes.
otherworldly person. But I feel like I would do something like maybe have two Karnaks where one is on each side of the stage and they're jackknifed in.
That could be cool.
Yeah, like introduce more mysticism, I guess, is like make it a little more afterlifey. I did like the fact that a lot of the time the ensemble just like for Space Age Bachelor Man, you know, they put on a belt that had a tail attached to it, and that was like simple things like that. Or like I don't know if I would want to play with projection as much. It worked for this production. I liked though at the end during It's Not a Game slash It's Just a Ride when I think what we were watching was Jane Doe's life unfold.
Yes, the life that she was going to lead. That's correct. I thought that.
Yeah,
Which was super moving. Super moving.
maybe I'd take a page out of like Tuck Everlasting and make it
Oh,
into a
yes.
ballet or something. Cause you know the rest of the cast, it warrants them to not move. You know, it's a park and
Yes.
bark for them. It's not a game. And so I agree with that, but I feel like instead of playing with projections, maybe we incorporate, you know, costume changes or a dance or something. I don't know how else I think I'd have to mull it over some more, but
Mull
think first and
away, it's all
foremost, I would love to add more magic
yeah.
on stage just because we are in the afterlife. So make it a little
Right.
more
It can be anything.
ethereal.
It can be anything.
Yeah, maybe incorporate like haze more or something, a fog. What about you? What would you do?
Yes, I would direct this. Yes, I would try to get my hands on as close to the original script as possible. I have similar feelings, but I've taken it in a slightly different direction. I want the in between, because that's I cause I don't think they haven't crossed over yet. They're not dead. They're not alive, but they're not fully dead, if that makes sense. You know, like they're in
Yeah.
the weird this weird in between crosshair situation. I like the idea of actually having it take place at the carnival itself.
Oh.
So like you can see the like mat like you know have the gate have the have like actual carnival games on stage. I obviously have it all be really super creepy and like weird, of course. But I kind of like the idea of elements of the cyclone itself being on stage. So the actors have some place to sit and hang out on, and so like they're hanging out on a place where, you know, the last place that they were,
Okay. So
which was on this roller
like
coaster.
they could sit on the track or
Yes,
sit
on a
in the
track
car
or yeah,
itself.
the busted up car, you know, like that kind of a thing.
That's
And
pretty
using and
cool.
have like that be available for use to help like with the changing stories as each person comes up. And but I like this idea of having it stay in the world of the carnival, because first of all, carnivals are a weird place to begin with. Amusement parks are a weird place to begin with, because it's always a lot of people, you know, all kind of eating, drinking, you know, small children running around screaming. I mean, as I watched this musical, you know, I was thinking about Music in the Parks.
Okay.
You remember Music in the Parks from high school, where they took us
Yes.
and we competed? That's first of all, I'm like, oh my God, it's Busch Gardens 2004.
Yes. Yes, it
And I
is.
just sat there and I was like, yeah, I'm like, this could have been very easily, like, this could have happened to anybody, any of us at any given moment in time. Like, whoa, wild. And then that's kind of where like my brain went, was like going fully into like, we're going into amusement park world. And we are going to lean into the fact that it's a game until they prove us otherwise.
I might add people, but they're not They're just bodies slash stage hands in a way.
Or dancers.
Or dancers. They're
I'm a
not.
big fan of like having a dancing chorus, which I know is doesn't happen very often in musicals anymore, ever, where they're just hired dancers. They're not there to sing and dance, they're just there to dance.
Right,
I
but
would probably do that for this for a show like this. So that'd be
I would totally want to, though, like make them blank as well.
yeah, it could be anything.
So like we don't see their face. Like you were talking about wanting to black out Jane Doe's head somehow. I would want
Yeah.
these people to like, look like carnival workers in a way, but we don't see their face at all. That's where I'm my on the spot thinking for this is.
It's evolutionary, you know, and this is the kind of show where because it's the script is pretty strong, the score is very strong, and the characters are
Strong
strong.
themselves.
Everybody here, everything is strong. It sort of frees up a creative team to do whatever they want with it, because
Right.
it's sort of to a certain extent, if you cast the right people, it's foolproof. It will
Yes.
sell. There's an audience for this, and it's a one act, which I hate to
The
say it,
hour
you
and a
do
half.
love, I love a one act sometimes. I'm like, you're in and out in under 2 hours, and you get all the things you need in that time. So massive props. And I'm glad that it's kind of an evolutionary musical where it has grown so much from its initial inception in the early aughts to where we are. And it's at arena stage, for God's sake. Like, it's a big
Yeah.
house in this country. So it's really cool.
I
It's really
don't
cool to see. I appreciate evolution. I really do.
think this will ever go to like the West End or to Broadway, and I'm okay with that. No, I'm being serious. Like I
Know,
don't
I know.
this isn't a show that I think needs to go there. Like I know there are a lot of shows in the world that obviously, they do out of town tryouts, and the end goal is to go to Broadway or something. And this one, like, I think because it's small and because it's a little more intimate in a way,
Yeah.
I don't think it'll do well in a large house.
Yeah, I agree. It wouldn't, I don't know if it would thrive. I don't believe it would personally. I really
No.
don't.
Arena stage might be like the largest theater I think it should ever hit play. I think it'll be better if maybe like in a black box. I mean, yes, you can't then do a lot of technical elements to
You can't
it.
do all the cool shit I want to do.
Right, but I feel but like,
But it lends itself to that. It does.
yeah,
It
this
like we said at the very beginning of this episode, really, is like it is budget friendly in either direction.
it's a show that it could be played really anywhere, but I feel like it shouldn't be played on Broadway because then,
No, Broadway would ruin it, I think. And
yeah.
Broadway has a tendency to do this. It's done that to several shows that I've absolutely loved. And I've had to sit in the audience and know deep in my heart, I'm like, there's no way this is going to last more than 3 months.
Because then they'll start fucking with it, and you don't have to fuck with it.
It's
This
true.
the show
It's
is great to
true.
begin with, but.
Exactly. I'm like, you don't need it's it doesn't need much. It is
No.
like, in a way, it's like kind of like Shakespeare, where it's 90-10. I'm like, the script does 90% of the work for you. You just have to do the other 10%. And it's when we start overdoing it that things become problematic.
Yeah.
And so what
But
we got to see, oh, sorry, go ahead.
no, you continue.
Okay, sorry. No, but we got to watch before recording this, I think kind of has a nice balance. We both, I think that there could be some more refinement for sure, but it has that nice balance of maintaining that intimacy within the story, and also like having little touches of, amusement park magic.
Yeah. Like definitely during the Ballad of Jane Doe, where she's, I think that's what the flying is supposed to be. She's literally on the ride.
I thought that.
Yeah.
That was what my thinking was as well. And then also the fact that she's sort of lost. She's the most lost of the group. She's the
Especially
least grounded because she has no clue who she is.
her head is lost. Ha
I
ha ha
know. She lost her
ha.
head. Damn it, Jay. Damn it.
Lauren, is there anything else you want to talk about before we get into Sharp and Flat?
I'm glad that this exists. I can't say that about everything that we've talked about on this podcast. But I have to give credit to, and I have to give credit where credit is due. I have to give credit to my students who introduced me to this, because otherwise I might have passed it by. I would have been probably like, okay, yeah, whatever. But I think also too, the other thing is that I have a soft spot for shows like this. It's the reason I love Silence the Musical as much as I do.
Right.
Stranger Things, these little guys that don't need a whole lot in terms of money being thrown at it
Yeah.
because everything else, the work has already been done. And like I said earlier, like I am happy that this is out there and I'm happy that more and more people are learning about it.
All right, let's get into Strap and Flat, shall we?
Ooh. Let go.
Sharp flat.
So in this segment, we're going to highlight some moments, whether or not we talked about it. If we liked it, it's sharp. And if we didn't like it or thought it could change, it's flat. I want to start with flats because I have a John Reilly Sorbet flat. Thank you, Matt Koplick. And
Oh, okay.
my flat is that the player that I watched this on had commercial breaks that just like killed a lot of them. Granted, a lot of them happened after a song.
Okay, so
So
the timing was in total
it
garbage.
wasn't total garbage, but it was still just like, I don't care about these ads. Like, I'm not paying, I don't want to pay to have no ads, but like, do I need ads in this one? Come on, guys. But that's really it. I mean, I didn't really find anything bad about this production or the show itself. What about you? What are your flats?
The only flat I honestly have is in a similar vein. It has nothing to do with the show itself, but it has to do with the way in which this particular production was shot, if you can call it that. Where there are just points where I'm like, there are people talking on stage and I couldn't see them, or there was action going on in a portion of the stage, but because of where the camera was
Yes.
focused, I couldn't see it. And this is what happens when we end up with a one camera view of what's going on. And that is something that you just have to sort of, very much like you just have to deal with it because it's either that or you don't see it at all.
Right.
Those are our choices at this point in time.
So yeah, I
That
agree with
is,
you on that flat as well.
yeah.
Because there's definitely a moment in the beginning when Karnak is giving out, like saying what the prizes are of things, and they're focused on one side of the stage and not exactly like what's going on, where people are clearly looking in a direction and we don't see what they're looking at.
Yeah. And that's why I have to say it's not an issue with the production, with the show itself, with the music, with the story, any of that. It's more of a technical issue.
Right.
But that's one of those things that, until good archival footage is made available to everybody, this is where we're at.
Part of me
Thank you.
wonders to go back to your question that you asked me about if I what I would do to direct this. Part of me wonders if Karnak should be on stage the whole show. Like, what if Karnak was a disembodied voice?
That would work.
Like you said too, when you wanted to, you said you wanted to play Karnak because you didn't sing and you're just in a box. But like, do you have to be?
Necessarily. I mean, it could be anything. I like the visual representation personally.
Right, the fact that he's evil Zoltar, yeah.
A little bit like that, but also I think what I would opt for is because this is the afterlife or the in between. Yeah, I'm going to keep calling it the in between. The in between. I would want Karnak to be mobile. So I would want that box to have the ability to move around the stage.
There was one production I read. Sorry, there was a concert cycle in 2015 that there was no physical version of Karnak on stage or puppeteer. So that I think is cool. All right, sharps. Speaking of Karnak, I first sharped him adding more rules to fuck with Ocean. Because you know that when he said that prophetic thing at the beginning and it was all vague and whatnot, you knew it was about her. And you know that he's fucking with her because he can, and because she needs to break, because she's ha holding on to this facade about her. So the fact that he fucks with her the whole show, I loved it. I'm also sharpening Constance's monologue that we talked about her life and death, that, oh my God, like, I would love to start learning it. For just for my own. I'm also sharpening the stagecraft during the Ballad of Jane Doe for this production. We talked about, you know, how she's flying and the skirt not moving and the fact that she's like stiff as a board and singing upside down perfectly. I want to sharp the tight harmonies throughout. I guess this goes with you saying that they play with chamber music in a way, or they're playing with that, and the fact that the five to six voices, depending on the songs, like maybe there's two on a part, but that's it. You know, everyone is on their own. And then my last sharp is for It's Just a Ride. Like, that one gut punched me. What about you? What are your sharps?
I've discussed a lot of them. So what I haven't brought up is the treatment of Ocean over the course of the show, not so much by Karen, but by her peers,
Were they calling
where
her out?
well they call her out, especially what Ricky, who says, you know, if you didn't have me join choir, I wouldn't be here right now. And I was like,
Right.
shit.
Especially after her song too, where they're like, you just like dissed all of us, especially the one you call your best friend. Like,
And it's
she
kind of
is
nice.
a mean girl.
So it's very like when you get to, I love when we have the opportunity to see, to really, I guess, see and experience to what it's like to be, to not only be on the receiving end of it, but then to be able to openly express how you feel afterwards. Because oftentimes, like, we'll talk about it amongst ourselves, but we don't often get the opportunity to tell the person to their face, like, wow, you're a piece of garbage. Isn't
Right.
that what he called, what does Noel call her, a succubus or something?
Yes.
I'm like, yes, she is a succubus.
Yeah,
When
and the fact that
she tries to ruin his song and he flips out.
it turned into like the fact, sorry, the fact that they had to tell these truths in the purgatory in between, whatever we're calling it, like, that is saying something, you know, as well as a larger message to the audience at large. Like, you know, sometimes don't hold back. If someone's mistreating you, tell them.
If you have these feelings, you should probably say something. And I think that's sort of what Constance taps into in her monologue, where she realizes that she hasn't done very much
Anything,
living.
but she's okay with staying where they are. But yeah, that's why she had sex with the carny 3 hours before she died. So, any other sharps?
I love the score. I like that, we've already sort of touched on this, but I like that each character's songs were clearly identifiable. There have other
Yes.
musicals in the last few years that I've seen where I'm like, the songs all sound exactly the same. And
Yep,
I
we've
can't.
seen some together that
I've
you've
seen
talked
some
about
together.
afterwards.
Yes. And this is not, I don't believe that this is the case with this particular production, this particular show, is that we are, it's like, no, everybody gets different treatment. So it makes it so that almost everybody matters. Everybody is equity is here to stay.
Yeah.
Woohoo. Oh, yeah. I enjoyed Puppet Karnak. And
Yeah.
obviously Virgil. Virgil, I wanted
Virgil.
more Virgil. You know, okay, that's a flat I would like to tack on, is I wanted more Virgil, and that's on the writers. That's on nobody but the writers. Like, why didn't Virgil get a soliloquy?
Maybe in one of our maybe in one of our productions, we just cast somebody as Virgil and they're on stage the whole
Is the
show.
whole show just randomly playing bass lines, just
We
randomly.
can have a rat ensemble.
That's it, the rap ballet.
There we go. We got there. Would you add any of the songs to your life's playlist?
Oh goodness. I have most of this album already saved because, like I said, I'm working on it with a bunch of high schoolers right now myself. But I have been listening to with a certain amount of what I could only describe as religious ferocity, of reverence. I mean, religious reverence. It's not a game, it's just a ride. Like, because I'm learning it on piano right now. So that's one that's currently like that is really it touches. I think something really kind of intrinsically human, which
Yes.
is this, which is because for those of you that aren't familiar with the lyrics, you know, the whole point, what they realize is that, you know, you just have to go out and enjoy, you
Live
know, as much as
life.
possible. There's no, you know, we're all just sailing through space. There's no ups, there's no downs. It's also beautiful and strange and so much more than spinning round. And
Right.
it's kind of like, it just reminds you that, you know, like the small stuff isn't how much, you know, what really matters. In the moment, I guess, which I appreciate.
I said I would add Noel's Lament, Space Age Bachelor Man, The Ballad of
Yes.
Jane Doe, Sugar Cloud, and I only want to put the it's just a ride portion. I don't
That's fine.
I didn't really identify with it's not a game. I mean, I'll listen to this album without a doubt, but I think these are the ones that I'm going to like skip to mostly.
These are
If we're to
the
like
ones that at the end of the year, Spotify will say, "Hey, you have a problem because you were listening because you listened to Ballad of Jane Doe 80 times in one day." Like Spotify calling me out every December. It's like it's a ritual now.
Spotify sends me an email being like, "Are you okay? Do you need
Yes.
therapy?"
It's okay, my Spotify, they looked at my algorithm and they told me that I was like a 55-year-old middle-aged, like 55-year-old white woman.
Oh, good.
I'm
That's
like,
great.
it's close.
And on that note, Lauren, we're done with the episode. We did ride the cyclone.
We rode
Woo-hoo!
the cyclone.
We did it. What do you have to plug or promote?
Oh my goodness. I have a limited number of openings if anybody is interested in studying voice or piano with me or song interpretation. I have been described by my students as the cool teacher at the schools I teach at.
She
So
is the cool teacher.
I
She is.
which if you had spoken to me in high school, I doubt any of those words in a sentence put together would have been anything I could have ever imagined. So that's pretty rad. So if you're interested in studying with me, I have openings. As far as performance stuffs, no, for the moment things are. Oh wait, no, I lied. I will be caroling this holiday season as a swing because my schedule is already pretty booked with the Jolly Holidays. So I will be
Ooh.
occasionally caroling around New York City, Jersey, Long Island. In Connecticut, over the course
Wow,
of
the
November and
tri-state.
December. Oh yes, it's always a trip.
Well,
Always a
fun.
trip. So you can find out. You can find me and any more of my information at on Instagram at LAGIZZ underscore SANGS. And the Jolly Holidays is just the Jolly Holidays NYC if you want to follow the caroling group that I've been with since 2017.
Damn.
I know. Many seasons of ho-ho-hoing my way to greatness.
If you were in a production of Ride the Cyclone, I'd love to hear about what you did. Like, did you go super low budget and there was like, you used like different kinds of stagecraft, or did you have all the money in the world and was everyone flying at one point? You can email me at buttersongpod@gmail.com. Also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Threads at buttersongpod. Yeah. And if you know what the third show is in this trilogy, let me know. Brooke and Jacob, if you're listening, take
They
my
do listen.
advice.
The creators do listen to John. And I
I
say that
did.
only
They
because
do.
they do. They do
Sometimes
say
they
they
do.
do. Sometimes they do. So listen, if anybody knows the creators of this particular musical, pass this podcast their way. You
Yeah,
never know.
it was such a love fest that I think they'd appreciate it. And
Yes.
don't ask how we watched this, but we'd watched it somehow.
God.
And if you want to be part of the next episode's conversation, well, we will be closing out spooky season with the lore. L-U-R-E, not L-O-R-E. I want to make that clear. You know, the
Oh, like
lure.
reeling something in.
Yes. Yes.
Noise.
Mermaids.
Noise.
Yes.
Sirens. Noise.
Nice. Lauren, thank you so much for popping back on. I know it's been a minute,
It's
but
a pleasure, though. I'll be back.
well,
The
yes.
mayhem that's coming from me and my sister in the near future on this podcast is nothing John is really emotionally prepared for. So can't wait to talk to you later, babes.
And everyone, thank you for listening and bye for now.
Ciao, ciao.
Special thanks to Aaron Troy for creating the pod's artwork and to Nick Bombacino for composing the theme song and the jingles. A huge thank you to CastBox for hosting this podcast. And thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Life's But a Song. Bye for now, everyone, and have a musical day.